tonight on The Daily Debrief.
So I think it's important that all of this information is preserved, especially where someone can just hit a button and delete it.
R. Kelly's legal team heads to court again, and this time Michael Avenatti takes center stage. Plus, testimony set to begin again in a Florida courtroom where a dad is on trial for murdering his young daughter. We get you caught up on key moments so far. Also, chilling surveillance photos show a South Carolina college student's last moments alive before she was allegedly beaten to death by a man she thought was her Uber driver. The nation's most fascinating cases are on The Daily Debrief. It's Monday, April 1st. And good evening, everybody. I'm Rachel Stockman, in for Aaron this evening, alongside Michael Bryant. We have a lot to get to. Yet another development in the legal dealings of embattled R&B singer R. Kelly, who is facing criminal sexual abuse charges. His attorney appeared in a Chicago courtroom today. Here's the latest on Kelly's legal drama.
When you get in bed with fleas, this is what happens.
R. Kelly's defense attorney in court Monday seeking to play offense. Steve Greenberg wants to shift scrutiny away from his client and on to dealings between Cook County prosecutors and controversial attorney Michael Avenatti. Greenberg filed a motion to require all communication preserved between prosecutors and Avenatti, who is representing some of R. Kelly's alleged victims.
Right to a fair trial requires that they all be preserved.
Both Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox and Avenatti are under newfound public scrutiny, and Greenberg is seeking to capitalize on that.
We've already seen that State's Attorney Fox has conversations with people about pending cases, pending investigations. I want to know what conversations she had with Avenatti about this case.
Fox has been under fire for her handlings of the drop charges against actor Jussie Smollett. Allegations have been raised that she interfered on his behalf, despite claiming she had recused herself from the case.
I don't think that the Jussie Smollett situation is going to impact R. Kelly's trial. I think what it shows us is how this office operates.
Avenatti is also facing his own legal trouble. He was indicted last week by federal prosecutors in New York and Los Angeles. He's accused of extorting sportswear company Nike and separately of embezzling funds from a legal settlement and avoiding taxes. Law and Crime host and former prosecutor Bob Bianchi did not mince words.
If these allegations are true, if this was done for the purest reason, and the prosecutor is now compromised, they've compromised the very victims that they are sworn to protect.
R. Kelly has vehemently denied the sexual assault charges against him.
I didn't do this stuff. This is not me. I'm fighting for my life. Y'all killing me with this.
The judge in Kelly's case did not rule on the motion. The next court date will be on May 7th, and R. Kelly will be required to attend. Right. I'm joined now by attorney Michael Bryant, also a host, legal analyst with me. Do you think this was a smart decision, Michael, on Greenberg, R. Kelly's attorneys?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's like he got two gifts very, very quickly there. First, the Avenatti debacle. You know, now he's a defendant. So it throws a little shade on him. And then the whole problem with the Chicago police force and Kim Fox. And, I mean, these are gifts this guy has been given, even if they're just distractions.
In the end of the day, he's basically asking for something quite simple, which is just preserving the email communications between the two. Do you see a judge granting something like that?
I think so. You know, of course, it's hard to actually delete something these days anyway, so it's probably going to be protected, practically speaking or legally speaking. I think he did this just to get out in front of it, too, to immediately get some press to think more favorably, if possible, about his client.
Okay, really quickly here. So now Michael Avenatti is facing these very serious charges, both out of New York and California. Does that affect at all the R. Kelly case in terms of his representation of these alleged victims?
Well, you know, you would hope not. But how can it not have some dark shadow over it? Because if he's a liar in one instance, maybe he's a liar at representing clients in others.
All right, thank you, Michael. We'll get back with you in just a moment. Testimony is set to begin tomorrow in a Florida courtroom where a father's on trial for the death of his young daughter after he threw her off a bridge. John Jungchuk is accused of murdering Phoebe Jungchuk by releasing her into Tampa Bay. The question is whether the defendant is legally insane and whether he can be held criminally responsible. Whether he can be held criminally responsible. Prosecutors are trying him on charges of first-degree murder, aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, and aggravated fleeing and eluding officers. First, let's go to the police officer who witnessed John Chuck taking his daughter Phoebe out of his car and throwing her off the bridge.
The driver yelled, "You have no free will," and crossed in between the two cars. At that point, the driver walked around to the passenger side and reached in. I ordered the driver to show me their hands. They still did not comply. At that point, I was still anticipating a violent encounter, possibly firearm related. The driver emerged from the vehicle holding a small child who appeared to be asleep at the time, turned and let the child go over the side of the bridge. I was shocked, but immediately my concern is the health, welfare, and safety of the child.
Did you hear anything when the child was dropped from the top of the bridge?
I did. I heard a faint scream and a splash.
What happened to the defendant, the driver of the vehicle?
The driver returned to his vehicle, crossed between our two vehicles, and left.
What were the winds like?
Winds were gusting over 20 miles an hour. At a couple of points, I was nearly blown off of the bumper walkway area at the bottom of the bridge.
What was the water like?
It was rough. It was very dark and cold. I continued to call until a fire rescue boat arrived in the area. At that point, I got on Fire Rescue Boat 11 to assist in searching and coordinating between police and fire resources.
Did you ever see Phoebe in the water when you were at the base of the bridge walking that catwalk?
I did not.
The case has led to many questions about whether Phoebe John Chuck's death could have been prevented. One officer who actually spoke with the defendant before Phoebe's death testified that he did not have enough evidence to involuntarily commit her under the Baker Act, which is Florida's mental health law.
I'll always kind of start off with, you know, do you feel like hurting yourself or anyone else?
Did you ask him that?
Yes, I did.
And his response was?
No, he did not.
Okay. What else was on that checklist?
So I'd like to ask some questions like, are you hearing things that you don't think are there or seeing things that aren't there?
What was his response to those questions?
No, he did not.
Okay, so he was having no delusions or hallucinations that he told you?
He told me he was not.
All right. Go ahead.
Once he said no to those questions, the line of questioning is pretty limited from there. I can only go off the feedback they give me.
Did he mention that he had any kind of mental illness?
He said previously that he'd been diagnosed as bipolar years back and that he'd been on medications, but he was no longer on those medications.
Was he calm?
Very calm.
Coherent?
Yes, sir.
Responsive to questions?
Yes, sir.
At the end of that conversation, what occurred?
I found that there was no legal reason for a Baker Act, and he was free to leave.
Okay. Did you speak with the priest at all?
Briefly, for about 5 minutes.
Was that before or after you allowed him to be released?
After.
Okay. Anything about that conversation with the priest that changed your view of what you were doing?
No, sir.
Did you have an opportunity to see his daughter Phoebe that day?
Very briefly.
Okay. Tell us about that.
They were walking out the front doors of the church. I saw them hand in hand. She appeared happy and waving, and they walked out the front doors of the church.
And you felt comfortable letting him leave with her?
Yes, sir, I did.
John Chuck's defense team says he committed the killing, but that he was insane at the time. A psychiatrist who observed John Chuck behind bars helps build their case. He describes what he calls John Chuck's unusual religious references and one odd admission.
Based on the, the first encounter, I mean, he came to introduce himself and says John the Baptist, that kind of statement like that. This came out of nowhere because we were not talking about, like religion or nothing like that. So, and I did remember that if I asked if he knew why he was arrested, he said why. He told me why.
Did you find it unusual that how he answered that question?
I did. Most of the people, when they, by my experience, the patients that do you know, that kind of crimes, they usually they don't want to talk about it. They avoid the conversation. Or why did they say that they don't know why they got arrested? So I find it unusual that he kind of volunteered to tell me exactly what he did.
Very interesting hearing from the different psychiatrists. Another medical expert took the stand for the defense and summarized John Chuck's years of mental health issues and explained his official diagnosis from a previous doctor who had observed the defendant.
At 16, he's already had a long history of mental health problems?
Yes.
What's the next thing you noticed that was important to you?
We jumped to age 21. He began seeing a psychiatrist. Dr. Arthur diagnosed him with, well, he noted some of the history. He took, it appears he took some history from Mr. John Chuck and noted that John was first diagnosed at USF, that he was diagnosed with ADD, attention deficit disorder, and he was prescribed Ritalin, which is a common medication for ADHD and ADD. And he diagnosed John, again, age 21, with bipolar disorder, panic disorder, and ADHD. The next note that is highlighted is from December 2012, when he was 23 years old. Some of the symptoms that Dr. Arthur noted was that John was experiencing somatic hallucinations. So and now he's experiencing hallucinations where he's feeling his skin bubbling, but there's no evidence that his skin is actually bubbling. He quoted John as saying, "I'm losing it."
All right, so I have Michael Bryant back on set. A lot of stuff to digest here. The real question is, we're about to go into the prosecution's rebuttal starting tomorrow. Have they proven beyond a reasonable doubt that John Johnchuk knew what he was doing was wrong at the time he threw Phoebe over the bridge?
I'm not sure they're there yet. There's so much confusing information about what this defendant was thinking and what he thought immediately before and after. Remember, he fled the scene, in my opinion, the way he left, tried to elude the police. That suggests he knew something he did was wrong, okay? So that's good.
After. So the question is, in those moments, was he in a psychosis? Did he understand what he was doing?
To me, to ask the jury to parse that out is so unfair, because they have to find, not after, not just before, but at the time that he dropped that child over the edge, he was insane. I don't know that anybody, professional, layperson, I don't know how anybody can do that, really.
And then you really, it becomes the battle of the experts, right? Which one do you believe? And then you also have some of these, I guess, lay experts, the priests that worked at these churches weighing in whether he was insane or whether he was losing it at the time. I think that's something very difficult for the jurors to try to figure out what's going on here.
No doubt. And then they also get to hear of decades of mental problems. I don't know how you ignore that. It seems to me logic says if he's had all these problems right up to the time it happened, come on, it's more likely. That's not the standard, but it's more likely he was still having problems then when he killed his daughter.
But you will also find that he was manipulative, right? And that even his own family members thought that he was staging this.
Yes, that he could use insanity when it served him.
Exactly. All right. Excellent, Michael. Stay with me. We have a lot more to get to on the Daily Debrief. We will take you back inside the John Chuck courtroom in just a few minutes. But first, a Playboy model arrested for allegedly stuffing a doctor into the trunk of a car. We'll bring you those bizarre details. Also, a community is shocked after a Grammy-nominated rapper is gunned down just hours before he was set to meet with officials to discuss ways to curb gang violence. That after this quick break. A Grammy-nominated rapper was gunned down Sunday evening just hours before he was set to meet with politicians about curbing gang violence. Several city officials say rapper Nipsey Hussle was fatally shot outside a South Los Angeles clothing store he owned. Two others were injured in the shooting. Police say an investigation is ongoing. Hussle was set to meet with the Los Angeles Police Commissioner Board and the chief of police to discuss ways to tackle gang violence issues in the community. A South Carolina college student was found dead Saturday just hours after she ordered an Uber but got into the wrong car. Police say Samantha Jofferson mistakenly got into a car she thought belonged to the Uber driver she requested. Instead, she got into the back seat of a car driven by Nathaniel Rowland, who is now charged with her murder and kidnapping. Chilling surveillance stills released by the Columbia, South Carolina Police Department showed the college senior's last moments alive. Her battered body was found by turkey hunters in a field 90 miles away. Police say blood was found inside Roland's car. A doctor found dead in the trunk of a car hundreds of miles from home, and a model is now in serious legal trouble. Playboy model Kelsey Turner was arrested by Las Vegas police in connection with the death of a California psychiatrist who was allegedly paying her rent. The doctor's body was found in the trunk of a car along a deserted road near the lake recreation area in Nevada. His body was bludgeoned, and police say his cause of death is homicide. They have not speculated on a motive for the crime. An investigation, though, is still ongoing. Back now to the Florida courtroom, where John Johnchuk is on trial for throwing his 5-year-old daughter Phoebe off a bridge. The crux of the case deals with whether or not Johnchuk was sane at the time of his daughter's death. A priest Johnchuk came into contact with said he thought that the defendant had mental health issues, but get this, on cross-examination said he never perceived the defendant was a threat.
You never thought that for any moment during your conversation that he would be a danger to himself, right?
Correct.
You never thought that he posed any danger to Phoebe, right?
Correct.
Okay. Had you thought that, you would have handled things differently, right?
Correct.
And he made one comment about him being the Pope, right?
Correct.
What did he say?
I don't remember the context, but that he mentioned that he thought he was the Pope. I questioned him about it, said, "You don't really believe that, do you?" And he answered no.
Okay. So he withdrew that quickly, right? And you talked about the Bible.
Yes.
He didn't say anything to you about the Bible that was alarming, that you recall.
No, he was concerned about it, wanted to know what it was. He didn't know what it was. It was a Bible, even.
Okay. And you told him that this was a special book, it's an antique, he should cherish it, right?
It seemed like a family heirloom.
You could tell there's something a little off with him, right? You've said that previously.
It was definitely off, okay. And his thoughts were rambling. So
right.
I had to sort of keep him focused.
Right. But he was able to have that conversation with you, correct?
He was able to have a conversation.
Okay. And at no point did he ever say that he was God?
No.
He never told you that you're God?
No.
He never said that he's Michael, the archangel?
No.
Never told you that you're Michael, the archangel?
No. To me, it seemed like he was in crisis, but that he was in contact with reality.
In contact with reality. Okay, that's important. The defendant's mother testified on his behalf just 2 days after she testified for the state. During her cross-examination, the state emphasized that Johnchuk's bizarre ramblings were only meant to intimidate and that he intended to, quote, ruin his mother's life by killing Phoebe.
He would say these bizarre off-the-wall things to mess with people, right?
With me, yes.
And he'd been doing it since he was a teenager, right?
Yes.
Did it all the way up to the time of the murder?
Yes.
Okay. So saying off-the-wall bizarre things and mean things was not unusual for him?
No.
And when he said he was going to f*** up your life, you thought he was talking about Phoebe, right?
At that time, I wasn't sure if he was going to try to mess up my probation and put drugs in my coffee, or if he was talking about Phoebe at that time. Because I never really thought that he would ever do anything to hurt his daughter, because he loved his daughter.
But he didn't want Michelle to get her, did he?
No.
Didn't want Guy Kisser to get her, did he?
No.
And told you he was going to f*** up your life, didn't he?
Yes.
And a few days later, he murders her, right?
Yes.
Gosh, just such some compelling testimony there. Joined again by attorney Michael Bryan. I want to talk about this because, again, the prosecution does not have to prove a motive in a case. Nope. However, they did present one. Do you think they did an adequate job of that? And could you kind of get into what they think that motive is?
You know, it's funny. If you think about that motive, which is, hey, you're going to lose custody of Phoebe and the mother is going to have custody, or the parents of the defendant, is that motivation enough for him to kill the child? It almost says to me, no, it's not. Therefore, he must have been insane when he did it, because the motive the prosecution is offering is maybe not good enough.
Except he seems like, listen to that testimony from his own mother saying he's going to F up her life. It seems like he has outbursts and he's capable of something
can you
like
imagine
this.
Though saying that, I mean, those are words, strong words, but then carrying it out in a way, you know, maybe there are many other ways to F up her life than throwing her grandchild off a bridge. Seems to me there might be.
Right.
So I don't know if you can say just cursing her out in that way would necessarily lead to dropping the child off the bridge.
Let's talk quickly, Michael, about all of the different ways, and it was just heartbreaking to me, all the different ways somebody could have intervened to save this child. I mean, you know, of course we have the state that could have, protective services, we had police, but then we also had that attorney, his own attorney, who he asked to take care of Phoebe the day that this all happened.
I'm sure all of them are having horrible feelings of guilt now. And especially, I think of the cops involved too, when they're making an assessment in the field, are they really equipped to make that kind of decision about somebody? Are you looking to hurt yourself or somebody else? No. Okay, well, that's good enough.
Yeah, I mean, because we heard from that cop that talked about why he didn't Baker Act.
It just seems to me that that's putting way too much decision-making power in the wrong hands. And we know that he was Baker Act involuntarily committed 27 times before. So I think there might be a boy who cried wolf element to this, that these cops are used to this guy, they know him, they've gone through this drill before, they really need to see something more to do it.
But what a shame, because if that, I mean, I hate to point blame at anyone because so many people and places were to blame in this. But if that cop had just Baker Act him when the attorney had called in 911, this would be a totally different story. But then again, maybe it wouldn't have been.
Well, that cop
yeah.
is asking himself that same question. What could I have done differently? What kind of mistake did I make? Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
It is so heartbreaking. We're going to continue to very closely monitor this trial. It's going to start back live again tomorrow. We're expecting a rebuttal case. So we'll keep an eye on that. In the meantime, thank you all for watching the Daily Debrief tonight. Join us again tomorrow at 5 p.m. Eastern on the Long Prime Network. Our coverage of live trials begins tomorrow morning. Thanks again.